Good morning, Nashville. Corey Curtis sitting in for Braden Gall with Derek Mason this morning on The Morning Drive, ESPN's 102.5. The game, Braden has had a relapse of the Packers meltdown in San Francisco, and he's still searching for a way to deal with it. And so I will be sitting in for the next 4 hours with my man Derek Mason, which means you're going to get more Titans talk than you probably know what to do with and what this program probably planned for. but we got plenty to talk about today, Mason. There's a lot going on, and not just in the football world. There's a ton going on. We're going to have Sean Henry on the show. We're going to talk some gambling today on the show. We are going to talk some Predators on the show. Sean Henry will join us. We're going to talk Vanderbilt, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about that one as well. And, of course, the Titans taking on the Colts. Last night, though, the big shocker, Stephen F. Austin, knocking off Duke. And not just beating him, beating him in Cameron Indoor Arena, ending a streak of 150 consecutive non-conference victories.
That was like almost automatic. As soon as you walk into that arena, you're winning. It's just like as soon as you walk, it's just the other teams, they're going to win. Just chalk it up as a loss. We'll move on to the next game. But that's college. To me, that's college basketball. But you did bring up a point, Corey. It's not that they lost. They lost at home.
In neutral court, exactly. That stuff happens. But to lose at home to a massively inferior opponent is surprising.
Yeah, college basketball over the years, I've watched, I love college basketball, pro basketball as well, the NBA. But what I've noticed in college basketball, basketball in general, but more so in the collegiate ranks, is that you don't have to be the biggest team. You don't have to be the most physical team. If you can shoot lights out from the outside, you can win. You got a shot.
It's the great equalizer.
Absolutely. That's why people love the tournament so much, that you can get a team that, is ranked 16th versus a number 2 or 3. And just that night, they go, they hit 23 three-pointers.
Yep.
And they end up winning the game. And that's sort of like the Stephen F. Austin. If you can shoot from outside, you can do some things, a few things inside, get a couple of turnovers. You put yourself in a position against a team that's much better than you in a position to win. Because what happens to Duke is the game's close, and all of a sudden, that team that is supposed to beat you by 30, they start to get tight. And then they start turning the ball over. They start missing baskets, not paying attention to detail. Everyone's trying to win the game. And then you look after the game, and Stephen F. Austin wins.
And Duke also missed 16 free throws in the game, and that'll get
That don't help either.
The Tennessee Titans started out a 3-point underdog at Indianapolis. That number is down to 2, which is shocking, consider the house of horrors that Lucas Oil Stadium has been for the Tennessee Titans. But I think it also goes to speak not only to the fact that the Titans have won 4 of 5, but this is a banged-up Indianapolis team with Marlon Mack already ruled out with the hand injury, Eric Ebron on injured reserve, T.Y. Hilton leaving the last game with that calf injury, stiffening up. He's going to try to practice this week. Those are arguably their 3 best offensive players.
Yeah, and, their quarterback just got back. Yeah. He missed some games. So this is a team that has gotten, injured at an inopportune time. We always say in the NFL, it's a war of attrition. The month of November and December are usually the months where teams start to separate themselves. One, because you start to figure out who's the tougher and who's the more
mentally tougher. Well, it's funny how the teams that are struggling lose more guys to IR.
Absolutely.
At that point.
And then the teams that are not as good, they start to get injured. Guys start to say,
I'm going to shut it down.
I'm going to shut it down, and I'm going to go have that elective surgery now. I'm not going to wait till after the season.
The Chance Warmack finger surgery.
Exactly. I didn't say a chance.
I love Chance, but when you shut it down for a finger.
Yeah, something's wrong. But this is the time of year where, Indianapolis, the Titans, and Houston, just talking those 3 teams, where they want to be their healthiest down the stretch. And Indianapolis is dealing with injuries that the Titans and Houston Texans are not, and that's injuries to key players. So I can see why the line, went from, and even though it dropped a point, but still, it went from 3 to 2.
That's a quick point, though.
Exactly. But that means what they're really saying is this is an even game.
Well, 3 points is even.
Exactly.
So at 2 now, they're saying we think the Titans are a little bit better. I think the Titans, if it, look, I think this is a low scoring game, and I think if the Titans get to 21, they probably win the football game. They're going to have to get 21. We'll see if they can get there. But you brought up, we've been talking about the injuries. The Titans do have a couple of injuries. Yeah. Chris Milton went on injured reserve yesterday. Mm-hmm. He's been a very good addition on special teams. He's been excellent in kick and punt coverage. But also Cameron Wake goes on injured reserve.
I saw him go down. I didn't realize something, it was that serious. He went down, what, it might have been the third quarter, somewhere around there.
I don't remember the exact point.
He went down and kind of stayed down for a minute. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that. That it was as serious as it has been for him, so much so that he has to go on IR.
I'm going to quiz you now on Cameron Wake.
Okay.
How many sacks does Cameron Wake have since the opening game at Cleveland when he had 2.5?
He finished his season with 2.5.
He did finish his season with 2.5. How many tackles has he had since the opener at Cleveland when he had 3?
He finished the season... I'm going to be generous and say he finished the season with 3.5,
He finished with 4, and he had it the next week against the Colts. He has not had a tackle since week 2, not even an assist where you just kind of fall on a guy at the end of the play when somebody else is bringing him down. He does not have a tackle since week 2. He has not – I mean, he has 4 tackles for the season, and I know he's a part-time player, and I know he's been banged up some. And you know, look, I think he's got 11 pressures. So he has done some things that have helped some. But when you look at the paycheck, the $8 million basically a year, 3 years and $23 million, that doesn't live up to that.
And, no, not at all.
And he's going to count. I wrote about this on my Facebook page yesterday, WKRN.com, WKRN and Corey Curtis. He'll count next year $8.36 million against the cap. Mm-hmm. And I think only about $2.5 million if they waive him. I have a really hard time seeing them bring him back. I'm not advocating anyone getting cut, anyone losing their job, and saying no one has any value. I'm just saying I look at managing of the cap, and you know, you're bang for your buck as you manage the cap. And I have a hard time having them look at this and go, he's going to be 38 next year. He was injury prone this year.
What are we going to get next year?
Yeah.
Unless, you know, they rework the deal.
Well, okay. I mean, that's something entirely different.
And he comes back for $1 million, $2 million.
Yeah.
And then they keep him for the veteran leadership. Like you said, every guy, just about every guy, especially a guy like him, has value to your team.
Yeah.
It might not be from a play aspect.
I mean, guys like Sharif Finch and Harold Landry learn from that guy.
Have value in the locker room for you. So if he takes a pay cut, then maybe he's on his team. But like you said, 2.5 sacks, 4 tackles, $8 million, don't equate.
Yep, and you don't pay $8 million for veteran leadership.
Nah, you pay more like $1 million, million and a half. That's a lot of money for just leadership.
Yeah. How much did you get for leadership?
Probably that much.
Okay, you finished with the Jets and with the Texans, right? How much time did you spend with the Jets?
I spent 4 months, which because I got cut right. I got traded, right?
Best day of your life.
Oh, definitely the best day of my life. I got traded Halloween, right before Halloween.
And you went to the Texans.
Went to the Texans. So right before Halloween.
Did you
right
finish
after.
The year?
Finished the year with the Texans.
Okay.
And
that didn't look right, by the way.
It didn't. It didn't feel right. No.
I remember seeing you at Nissan Stadium going, man, it doesn't look right.
It didn't look right. It didn't feel right. When I got there, and this is maybe what Cameron Wake is going to have to deal with. Being with the team for so long, and then your last year you choose to sign somewhere else.
Like Eddie with the
you
Cowboys
just don't want to bounce around after that.
No.
And then you get into this, and maybe he felt this way. I'm not going to say he did, but maybe, just maybe, where it wasn't fun for him. He came to work, he did his job, he practiced, but practice wasn't fun for him the way it had been. You know,
or maybe he was 37.
And but once you start to get a little older, and you know this is going to be, you know, you assume this is your last year or two, and you get with a team and things are not going the way you want it to, you start to think like, man, do I really want to go through this another year? If I get cut, do I want to try to go and make another team? I'm done.
If the Titans do move on for him, or if they don't restructure, if he is simply a free agent after the year, I can't see any way he sniffs a deal anything close to the 3 years, $23 million.
Oh no,
he's got to be looking at one at that point at 38 years old.
I think he goes back to Miami and retire.
Yeah, well, I mean, that would make the most sense.
Yeah,
that would make absolutely the most sense. But you know, you take a chance on guys, and again, I'm not saying that he hasn't had value for this team. But you know, you would have. I'm certain they thought they were going to get more sacks out of him this season. Thankfully, Harold Landry has become a steady presence in the past.
And maybe
rush.
He's helped Harold Landry.
I'm certain he's helped
you know?
Harold Landry.
And now you start to see Harold Landry become more of a – we look at him now as a potential double-digit sack guy for the next, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
Yeah.
Because of the way he's playing. So maybe Cameron Wake's presence – has helped Harold Landry and some of those other pass rushers, like you mentioned, Finch, you know, Sharif Finch, and some of these other guys, teaching them how to be pros, how to go about their jobs, new moves, counter moves, you know, how to study offensive linemen. That stuff sometimes is, you know, kind of invaluable. You can't put a number. Stuff like that is valuable. You can't put a number on a guy, a young guy, second year guy, learning from a veteran guy, especially if the veteran guy like Cameron Wake is doing it the right way.
Yeah, I'm not turning the page on this year. There's a lot of meaningful football to play for the Tennessee Titans, but this whole Cameron Wake conversation has led with me, with a number of people on social media and just in person, to a deeper question about next year, and that's the managing of the cap and Cameron Wake, Deion Lewis. I mean, he's the 10th highest paid running back in the game.
Wow, is he?
Yeah, at $5 million a year. So, I mean, there's another one where you don't see him. I mean, I think next year he only counts like $1 million against the cap. And then the biggest question for me of all, because he's probably on my Titans Mount Rushmore, is Delanie Walker. And, you know,
he's gone too.
He's up there with you and Eddie and Steve. I mean, he has been a fantastic football player for this team. I still think he's got football to be played, but he's going to count over $8 million against the cap next year. And, you know, I think he can still play, but I think that the way this team operates, he is becoming, when he is healthy, a situational package player, and I don't know if they'll want to pay that much. So there's big questions to be answered. One of those big questions still facing the Titans is, do they make the playoffs? Really, I think there's one spot left in the AFC. We're going to look at the teams that are up for that spot, who they've got to play, and who we think will be in the dance when this season ends. That's next on The Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Corey Curtis with Titans legend Derek Mason. Does that ever get old?
Not
for me, but just in general.
Not really. No.
Just in general. Will there ever be a time where you don't look at yourself as a football player?
You know, I don't now.
No?
I really don't.
Because I still look at you as a football player.
Oh, the only time I kind of that I get into sort of that mode is when I'm in here, because we're always talking about football in sports. And then, like, if I'm at a, I don't know, if I'm at a sporting, like, I go to the Titans game. And I'm.
Yeah, where were you Sunday?
I'm sitting there. Oh, man, I had to.
You're always behind me.
I know. I was at home, man. That game started late. I said 3 o'clock is late. But.
Well, you know, you had to get to the Shoney's Buffet at 4. You're retired now.
Exactly. But, yeah, those are really the only two places, because other than that, man, it's like I, as much as I enjoy football, when I leave here,
you're done.
Or I leave, like, I'm not at the Titan Stadium, I'm done with football.
Yeah.
I switch to basketball or something else, hockey or something else. But I'm done with football. It's like, put it on the side. And
you know, you lived it for a long time.
So it's like,
well, just so you know, everybody who hears your name or sees you, we think you're a football player. So
that's cool.
You can't,
or the coach.
You can't escape it. No, I've never thought you were a coach. Oh, you, Derek Mason, the other coach. No. By the way, I think he's on to his third haircut of the season, his third hairstyle.
I hadn't seen the newest hairstyle.
He just went tight.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, it just went tight.
Yeah, because he had the little, he had a mini fro, and then he had something else.
He had the thing to start the season.
Yeah, what was that?
I don't know. It was. You know what, though?
He's daring.
He's daring, and I appreciate that.
People with hair can do that.
Thank you. I've had the same haircut for 30 years. All right, the AFC playoffs are, you know, I don't want to say anything set in stone, but the first five look pretty well set in stone, and that's the Ravens, the Patriots, the Texans. I'm missing somebody here.
Ravens, Patriots, Texans. Is it
Chiefs.
Kansas? Yeah,
Chiefs. And then the Bills at 8-3.
You think
with
they're
the
going to make
softest schedule of all time? Appear to be kind of locked in for the number five. So you've got a number of teams battling for that sixth spot, and I think the team that's in it right now will not finish there, and that is the Steelers. They've so we will start with the Steelers because they're there. They still have to play Baltimore, so that's going to be a sixth loss. I think they will lose to the Browns this weekend. They've already turned to Devlin Hodges back at quarterback. Their coaching staff has done an amazing job, you know, putting it together with duct tape and Band-Aids and bubble gum. But I don't think this thing, especially through the controversy of the Colts game, I don't think this thing can hold together long enough to get them to the postseason.
Nah, I think Mike Tomlin and his staff has done, they've done all that they can do.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of time. You're just hoping you reach the shore before the boat goes down. Yeah.
Like, if the playoffs could start today, they would be ecstatic.
Yeah, they'd be fine. Yeah, that'd be great. But I can see the shore, but it's so far away, and the boat is just, I didn't put duct tape or whatever else I could do, you know, but it's going down. That's where Pittsburgh is at. But it's amazing how they've been able to, through the midst of a bunch of, you know, injuries, you know, having to trade guys at the beginning of the season, you know, Antonio Brown, just a whole bunch of stuff. They've managed to keep it all together and have themselves in a position at 6-5 and sitting at the last spot in the playoffs right now, if indeed it started today. But, yeah, I'm like you. I think eventually the dam is going to break and you know, the boat is going to fill up with water and it's going to flood and hit the bottom of the ocean. And that's going to be it. And everybody's going to be trying to swim to shore, the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I think for the most part, their schedule, they're done. I know they lose to Baltimore, even though it's going to be a tough game because it always is.
They don't have enough firepower.
The Cleveland game is just, that's one of those games where you don't know which Cleveland team's going to show up.
You know what? Let's talk about Cleveland. I was going to talk about Cleveland last, but since they're playing Cleveland next, let's talk about Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Cleveland is 5-6. Mm-hmm. And has a chance to run the table and go 10-6 and make the postseason. They're playing a struggling Steelers team that's gone to Devlin Hodges at quarterback. Mm-hmm. They have two games with the Bungles.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so that gets them to 8. Then they've got the Cardinals. Now, I think that game could be problematic for them in the desert. I think, you know, Arizona's been very competitive this year. And the Browns have not been a slam dunk. So that's a losable football game for the Brownies. And then they've got one more with the Ravens in Cleveland on December 22nd. So if they can beat the Steelers this week, which I think they'll do, then they've got the Bungles at home. They're sitting there at 7-6. They're rolling. You know how this thing goes. Mm-hmm. You know how confidence gets to be.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're looking at it saying, all right, we're 7-6. We got to go to Arizona and beat a Cardinal team that's going to be 4-8-1 at that point or something. And then it comes down to a home game with the Ravens. And we got to win one game basically to make the playoffs.
Well, here's the problem with this for the Cleveland Browns is that Raven game is not the end of the season. That's the problem for the Cleveland Browns because here's the thing. If Baltimore, say they continue to win, but New England continues to win, and maybe Baltimore loses.
So week 16, they put everybody on the pine.
Exactly.
They play RG3.
Exactly. They know that at they can't get no higher than what they are. And they can't really drop. They can't drop.
It's a great point, mate.
And they say, you know what? We're not going to get anyone hurt. We're going to sit everybody. If we win, great. If we lose, we're still in that second position. We still got home field advantage until then. Cleveland is sitting in a position where they're not playing anyone. They're not playing any starters. They're definitely not playing Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. They're playing RG3. This schedule, it's great, but if those two games were flipped, it would be much better for Cleveland.
Yeah, no, they're going to have to play to beat the Ravens.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it's going to be interesting. But I'm just saying, as much as we have to pinch our nose and say it, you have to look out for the Browns down the stretch.
Yeah, if they
went
straight out.
Because the schedule says so.
Yeah, if they went out. And this is why I love what the NFL has done within the last 10 years.
These meaningful divisional games.
Yeah, these divisional games, they put them at the end of the season.
Yeah, I like that,
where
too.
Where they mean something.
I do not like opening with divisional games.
Yeah, no, that's...
Like the Bears opening with the Packers or the Cowboys opening with the Giants. Why are we playing huge, meaningful games week one?
There's no need.
No, there's no need. It's bad for both teams. It's not good. All right, so then you've got the Colts, who are also 6-5, and as we talked about, banged up. But I think at worst, the Colts are probably looking at 9-7 because they've got the Titans this week. That's a losable game.
Mm-hmm.
They go to Tampa, then they go to New Orleans. You know, they could potentially lose three in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think Tampa looks kind of done.
Yeah, Tampa's done.
And then they've got the Panthers at home. The Panthers will be eliminated from the postseason by that point. And then they finish at Jacksonville, who's been done for a month.
Yeah.
So you know, if this is a huge game for the Colts, because I think if the Colts win this one, it kind of gets them to the finish line. It gets them to 10-6.
Yeah, the stress is not on them to now play perfect football from here on out. If they beat the Titans, that still gives them a leg up on the Tennessee Titans within the division.
And it gives them an AFC win over the Titans.
Absolutely. So, and then, you know, you're still at 9-7, you are still pushing it, but they give themselves a better opportunity if they beat the Titans, because I can't see the Panthers beating them. I can't see the Jaguars. They will be done by then. And the only game on this schedule that I can potentially see them losing is the Saint game, because the Saints are still in a position where, you know, they're fighting for a home game. I believe they're still in a position to, at 9-2, they're fighting for home field advantage throughout the playoffs.
Yep.
You know, so that game
is going
to be...
The NFC is brutal this year.
Yeah, that game's going to be a tough game for the New Orleans Saints.
They've got a couple with the Titans and the Colts looming. The Raiders are also 6-5. And they are kind of in the same boat as the Colts, where they have got three they should probably win, and two they're probably going to lose, and one of those is with the Titans. They've got the Chiefs next, and that's at Kansas City. I think we all expect them to lose that game.
Mm-hmm.
Although with the Chiefs defense, I think everything's open. And then they've got the Titans at home. And unfortunately for the Titans, that is a massive game for the Raiders. That is a must-win game for the Raiders. Even at 6-6, the Raiders are looking at it going, if we can run the table at 10-6, we're in the postseason, and they've got the Titans at home, the Jaguars at home. They're playing a Chargers team that's done and a Broncos team that's done.
Well, that loss, that
to the Jets,
bad loss last week.
I mean, it really opened the door for everybody.
They were in the driver's seat.
They're not anymore.
Now they put themselves in the back seat.
They're on the rooftop like Aunt Edna in National Lampoon Vacation. They've really hamstrung themselves with just, and not even a close loss, a horrific loss.
Yeah, I don't see how you lose to the, and I get it, it's the NFL, anything can happen, but
by 31?
The Jets team, that is, they're not a good team, but to lose by 31, I could see them losing by 3 points, maybe even seven.
It's the magic
but the
of
31,
Adam Gase.
31, that is just, that's just ridiculous. And their schedule, you know, after this is pretty hard. Kansas City, like you said, that's going to be a tough out.
They got that on the Titans.
The Chargers are going to be a tough out. And the Broncos, because they are divisional games, those three games are going to be tough out. And then you don't know, again, you don't know which Titan team is going to show up.
No, you don't.
And when they go to play in Oakland.
The Broncos are so bad.
Yeah, that
They're
team.
So bad.
And, I don't know. They fell so far. I mean, they've really fallen since their Super Bowl days.
Well, I mean,
a few years ago, that was what, 5-6 years ago?
Quarterback play is huge. It just is. I think they've hired the wrong guy at head coach. I mean,
oh, of course.
I mean, ever since, you know, everybody thought when Elway got Peyton Manning and they won the Super Bowl that John was the man. I mean, I did. We all thought he was the man. But every decision after that
has been a bad one.
It has not gone well. That's why I think I did my power rankings yesterday, and my loan statement about the Broncos was, we have now entered the Drew Lock portion of the season, and if John Elway's track record is any indication, it will not go well.
No, and it seems as if it's not going well, and I don't see things changing in the foreseeable future for the Denver Broncos, but Luckily, Oakland has to play Denver at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Because if it comes down to them winning that game and making the playoffs, I think I'm picking Oakland to win that game.
Yeah, I think so, too.
But, you know, like you said, you got 5-6 teams right now that are vying for that last spot, even the fifth spot as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you got four or five teams that are fighting for the last two spots in the last two wild card spots in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, the Bills are 8-3.
It's going to be tough to catch them.
I don't see anybody catching them. And the last team we've got on there, of course, is the Titans.
Yeah.
And they're 6-5. They've got five games left, and I don't think they're going to be favored in any five of those games, in any one of them.
No.
Maybe Oakland, if Oakland falls on its face again this week, maybe mm-hmm. Oakland. If the Titans beat the Colts and Oakland falls on its face, but you're still going to Oakland. Teams' histories of going out west or all the way out east from the west.
Had been good.
No, it's not good. So I don't see that. The Titans don't have an easy one the rest of the way. They can stub their toe one time.
And it's done. It's over with.
They can stub their toe one time. And they need that one stub to be New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
They don't need it to be against any AFC teams. But you're looking at having to win in Indianapolis. You're having to have at least a split with the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
And if you split with the Texans, you got to knock off the Saints.
Yeah, you got to beat the Saints.
It is a very difficult mathematical situation for the Tennessee Titans, to say the least. I know people believe in it, and that's great. Just going to be hard. That's my only point. The college football playoff. We got the same names in the party. We just shuffled the deck chairs on the Titanic a little bit. We're going to talk about the top four as it sits now and maybe who will or won't join that mix. That's coming up on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This is the Morning Drive. Good morning, everyone. Corey Curtis, Derek Mason in for Brayden Gaul on the Morning Drive. ESPN 102.5 The Game on this fine Wednesday morning in Nashville. Ohio State taking over as the number one team in the college football playoff poll over the LSU Tigers, who fall to number two. And then, of course, we've got the Clemson Tigers still undefeated at number three, and the Georgia Bulldogs hanging in there at number four. The only real change was the swapping of Ohio State and LSU. I would argue that's just to create conversation. I would argue this whole poll is to just create conversation. But it gets people fired up, Mace.
Yeah, it does. And it gets people, I guess, like me. Because I really don't understand. I really don't understand it. I really don't.
What, the switching or just
yeah,
the poll?
No, the switching. Because if you look at Old State, they played a close game versus Penn State. It was close.
It's a good team.
Penn State was a good team. But beside Penn State, Wisconsin. And listen, I've always said that the most complete team offensively and defensively is Ohio State. They've proven it. The most complete team. But I think the best team is LSU.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at LSU's wins.
Yes, they've got the best body of work.
They have. I mean, I understand that Auburn game was close. It really wasn't close. I don't think. Watching that game, there was never a point where I thought LSU was going to lose that game.
Alabama or Auburn?
Yeah, Auburn game.
Okay.
There was never, and that game was a close game. It was 23-20. I never thought that they were going to lose that game.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't. It was a close game. The Alabama game, never thought they were going to lose that game. If it wasn't for the debacle at the end of the mm-hmm. game where I don't know what, you know, Ed Orgeron and his staff were thinking, playing man-to-man and you're already up two scores. Why? And you, Tua, throws a 70-yard bomb. That game wasn't as close as the score indicates. To me, looking at their body of work, who they have to play moving forward, because A&M's going to be a tough out. That's a tough team. They played Georgia really tough last week. And they got a good quarterback, some good skill guys. Jimbo Fisher's a good coach. That's going to be a tough game.
They're going to win.
LSU?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I know LSU's going to win, but it's still going to be a tough game. I just think the body of work, what they've been able to do, they have clearly convinced me of them being the number one team. This thing, and I know it's all semantics.
I think anybody
and, you know,
with
it,
a brain
can change.
Says the exact same thing. Like I said, this just strikes up conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ohio State and LSU is the game we all expect to see for the championship at the end of the day. I think Kirk Herbstreit, the noted Ohio State alumni, gave his comments on how he thinks an Ohio State-LSU showdown would shape up. Marquise, do we have that? Do we have Kirk Herbstreit talking about a potential Buckeye-Tiger championship game?
That would be...
I mean, what do you think that line would be? That like, would be... 2 points? Be LSU. Whew. I think it'd be like LSU minus 1.5.
You think LSU... man, that would be a tough one because this would be... I think this would be the first and only time other than whoever Ohio State plays in the playoffs, this would be the only time that they would be stretched sideline to sideline, goal line to goal line as far as offense.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because either LSU or Ohio State's going to be playing Clemson in that semifinal. That's a heck of a game.
Man,
that is a heck of a game. All right, Kirk Herbstreit on a potential showdown between the Buckeyes and the Tigers for all the marbles.
Kirk, what do you think about the comparison between Ohio State and LSU? How would you stack them up?
Well, I think that it, as far as the committee's eyes, just before I get to that, I would just say that I think it has as much to do with what we just talked about. The respect that they've had all along for Penn State is why I think this week instead of next week or last week, I think it has to do with they look at Penn State as a very, very good football team. And the fact that they fought Ohio State, while some seem to think, wow, that Ohio State didn't look as dominant as they're supposed to. I think maybe the committee looked at that and saying, hey, that's a pretty good football team that they beat. Meanwhile, LSU's been, you know, not playing. They played Ole Miss and Arkansas last week. And I think the biggest thing is that the defense from LSU, I think, opens the door a little bit to look at Ohio State as a more complete team from September to last week, offensively and defensively. I think that's what the committee must have seen.
All right, that's kind of exactly what you were talking about and we were talking about. When you look at these two football teams, then you got the two quarterbacks, you know, Burrows versus Fields, and which one you think can get it done at the end of the day. The other interesting part to me, and I was talking with Marquise, our producer here, in between the breaks while you were taking care of some official business, was the potential for two SEC teams. And that, do you want that? If you do have two SEC teams, do you want to have that right off the bat in the semifinal, or do you want to separate those teams in hopes that you don't have an all-SEC championship game?
I don't think you rank them because you don't want an all-SEC
game.
I think you rank them based upon who you feel are the better teams.
Well, I'm talking about what they think, not what we think, because we think they're thinking about one thing or two things: ratings and money.
Yeah, I just think it all depends on now. It all depends on how that LSU and Georgia game looks in the SEC championship. Now, if that's a hell of a game either way, whether it's a offensive, you know, display or a defensive shutdown by both teams, then I think many are going to want to see that game again.
Well, because they'll both be in the playoff.
Exactly. Absolutely. If Georgia wins, people want to see that game, whether it's in the semi or in the finals. If it's a runaway by either team, then no one wants to see that game again. And I think the judges will.
Well, if it's
rank
a runaway, Georgia's out.
Yeah. Well, if it's a runaway, instead Georgia wins. It's a runaway. I think LSU still makes it regardless of what. I think they still make it.
I would agree.
If Georgia runs away, and I say run away with, I say 10 to 12 points or 10 to 14 points, then I don't think people want to see that matchup again.
Have you seen Jake Fromm?
You're right. I don't think they're going to win by 14 points. No. Matter of fact, if they do win, it will be because of their defense.
Yes.
So we're talking 21-24 or 20-23, something like that.
20-17.
Yeah, 20-17.
Yeah.
But if it's a game like, you know,
by the way, LSU's kicker is really good.
Yeah. He could be the difference between them winning a national championship
outstanding.
Yeah.
So,
but I know Alabama wish they had him, but that's a different story. But, yeah, it's just – I think the committee wants a situation where there are two teams from two different conferences in a championship game.
Okay, well, let's just throw this poll out, okay? Because this poll really doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. All that means is the last one.
Exactly.
And doesn't everyone expect it to be the top three teams in Alabama? Don't we all expect it to be? I mean, that's we all know that's where we're headed, right?
Because if Georgia lose, there's no way.
They're out.
There's no way. I can't. And people, you can make the argument for Utah. I know you can. You can make the argument for Oklahoma. I know you can. You can make an argument for Minnesota if they win.
Ratings and money.
Exactly.
Utah, if they win the Big Ten championship, or Alabama. You can have Clemson versus Utah or Clemson versus Alabama. You can have Ohio State versus Utah or Ohio State versus Alabama.
I think it will be, if they're finding, as long as Alabama stays at the five spot, and I said this weeks ago, Alabama, I thought they should have held Tua out the LSU game. Because even if they keep the LSU game close, it works in their favor.
Yeah, because they didn't have the starting quarterback.
Yeah. Play them. Make sure he plays against Auburn. That's all. Just make sure he plays against Auburn. You beat Auburn, you are in the best seat possible, where now you're watching everybody else in the championship games. And the only thing you need to happen is LSU wins. That's the only thing you need to happen is LSU wins.
And then you take care of business.
Exactly. You take care of business. You win. And maybe they're still in that. They're still in that position where they're number five in the country right now. And if LSU wins, Georgia's automatically out. And then the argument is Utah or Alabama. And I think the committee will mull on it very hard. But I think in the end, they will choose Alabama.
Yeah. I don't think there's any question. No, I mean,
there are a lot of Pac-12
Oklahoma
people.
Has one loss.
Yeah, Oklahoma.
But Baylor has one loss.
Yeah, but it's that Kansas State loss.
Yeah,
so
that's a bad loss.
Minnesota has one very difficult loss right now.
Mm-hmm. What can throw a monkey wrench in it? If Minnesota, they win their game
and
they beat Ohio State.
Yeah, and I agree. If Minnesota were to somehow go 12-1 beating Ohio State,
because
gets them
then
in
you can't drop Ohio State out of it still.
No,
they're like LSU; they're still in. Yep. But then do you put
Minnesota
a 12-1 Big Ten championship
in the
team
conversation
to the playoffs?
Yeah.
and not have Alabama, which will get you two Big Ten teams in the championship. And then you know what? I want that to happen because then, as much as I am a Big Ten guy, the Big Ten people can shut up.
Oh, man.
Because now you have two teams in there.
Yeah.
You have a legitimate two teams in there. So all the Big Ten, you know, people that are screaming, it's skewed toward the SEC.
Well, it is skewed towards the SEC.
Kind of, sort of. But if Minnesota wins... If Ohio State wants to do the Big Ten a favor,
they'll lose to Minnesota.
They'll lose to Minnesota
because
they're in already.
That would be interesting because Minnesota's been very good.
Yes.
And their one loss was very close.
Mm-hmm.
I know I was in Vegas. I had money riding on it, so I was watching that thing close. And you know, they very easily could have won that football game. We've got a big football game this weekend right here in our very own state for a different reason this year. We've got Tennessee taking on Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's beat them three times in a row, but Tennessee is a massive favorite this year. Should they be? We're going to talk about that, kind of what we expect. That's coming up next. This is Corey Curtis sitting in for Braden Gall with Derek Mason on The Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You know, I think it's important. You talk about the Mississippi State. You talk about Kentucky this past week. Against Missouri, that's three games there that, you know, the game was probably decided on the last drive with both groups, offense and defense. And probably all three games, there was points in the game that we could have played better, but when it mattered the most, we played at our best, you know. And the fact that you can take the football and run the game out says a lot about our offense, getting stops on defense. So I think it just shows the will of this team, you know, the character, the fight, the resiliency to find a way. And sometimes when you're not at your best, if you're going to win football games, you got to kind of will yourself to it. And I think our guys have done that.
Volunteers head coach Jeremy Pruitt on his rising football team, Tennessee, from the depths of despair all the way to 6-5 and already bowl eligible with a game to spare. Corey Curtis sitting in with Derek Mason on The Morning Drive this morning. Mace, the Volunteers are a 22-point favorite over Tennessee over Vanderbilt in Knoxville, and I think everyone expects this to be a 22-point football game.
This is uncharted territory for
A heavy favorite.
For Tennessee. A heavy favorite over Vandy?
Yeah, they haven't beaten
the last 2 years. Three years?
Yeah. 3 years in a row, Eric Mason's had their number.
This is something different but for the Vols.
It would appear, and I say this as both teams sit here and now, mm-hmm. Vanderbilt appears overmatched on both sides of the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. Coming into the season, I think when we looked at the schedule for both teams, we knew that the end of the year would be a critical game. It could, for both teams, because last year was sort of that way. Well, it was that way. You win UT and you're in.
Look, you knew whole Kentucky, Tennessee, Vanderbilt triangle
uh-huh.
was big and
exactly.
how those games all shaped up.
Absolutely. And last year it didn't work out for UT because they ended up losing to Vandy at the end of the year. They didn't make a bowl game. Vandy made a bowl game last year and beat Tennessee. And we looked at this game at the beginning of the season. It's going to be, like you said, Kentucky, that Missouri, Kentucky, Vandy for UT. Those are going to be the games that determines whether they make a bowl game or not. They started off slow, UT, but they picked up steam. And now we're looking at this game as being, okay, they are already in a bowl game. What bowl game? We don't know. But this can be a game, a statement game for the season. I'm not talking a statement game for the program because I don't think, beating Vandy, and no knock to Vandy or Derek Mason.
They need to reestablish themselves as the superior program.
Absolutely. It doesn't mean that if they beat Vandy, then they're off to the races. They're going to win 10, 11 games next year. I think this game means that they need, like you said, reassert their dominance
mm-hmm.
over Vandy again. They have the team to do it. They've been playing well. We all assume now that Jeremy Pruitt has gotten this program, this particular team, back, or he's gotten them where he wants them now. They're buying into it. Everyone's having fun. Everyone's reaping, they're reaping what they sowed in a sense of they sowed, some good on good soil, and they played hard in the midst of all that went on at the first three games.
It's pretty amazing.
And they flourish now.
Yeah.
You see the fruits of their labor.
Mace, what he's done with that defense is remarkable.
Uh-huh.
Part of that's getting Daniel Bytuli back.
Yeah.
But that's just one player. And that defense has been rock solid. I think what they've done with the offensive line, and I think mm-hmm. getting Trey Smith back has been huge. He's playing like a first-round pick right
yeah.
now. I don't know if he is or not because of the blood clot condition,
exactly.
but he is a dominant player. He is a guy who was one of the top-ranked players in the country coming out of high school. But the difference between these two teams, at its core,
mm-hmm.
is the quarterback position.
Yeah.
Because Vanderbilt has struggled at the quarterback position all year, and it has hamstrung their team. And when Jarrett Garantano struggled, the Volunteers struggled.
Mm-hmm.
And he struggled massively out of the gate. And he has been really good the last few weeks. Last week in particular, throwing for over 400 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And this team believes in him.
Yeah, there's two guys that I think on the offensive side of the ball that because of them, they are winning. One is Garantano.
Jawan Jennings. He sets the tone.
Absolutely. It's because of those two guys that I think that this program is starting to make a turn because of their attitude,
mm-hmm.
their veteran leadership, guys that want to win. And you can see it. You can feel it in those two guys. They want to win. Said yesterday that I believe the benching of Garantano was a must.
Oh, he
it
was,
had to
he
happen.
Was struggling.
Yeah, because not only was he struggling, but I think what he was doing was counterproductive to what the coaching staff was trying to do. They were trying to get everyone to buy in, even though it didn't look as good. And
mm-hmm.
even though Garantano couldn't see the trees through the fours or the fours through the trees, they did. The coaching staff saw it, and Garantano didn't. So because he didn't, he was trying to do things outside of what they were teaching him.
Mm-hmm.
He was changing plays. He was doing things that they didn't ask him to do because he was trying to win games by himself.
Mm-hmm.
The benching caused him to say, you know what? I can't do it by myself. If I trust, because that's all it boils down to, if I trust the coaching staff, the plays they're calling, and I trust the guys around me, we will win more games than not. And the benching caused him to sit back and start to trust Because if he wasn't going to trust, he wasn't going to get back underneath center.
And they trust him.
Yeah.
Because if you watch the end of that Missouri game, I think there was like 2 minutes to go, and they threw the football.
Yeah.
They trusted him to make a good decision. They trusted mm-hmm. him to complete it. And it was a huge play. And it was a huge moment, as you say, of trust mm-hmm. in their quarterback to not lose the game.
Exactly.
And he won the game. And so he has been very good. I expect him to be very good again this week. And we'll see what happens between Vanderbilt and
I hope it's
Tennessee.
Not a blowout, though, you know, Corey. I hope it's not.
Well, I hope it's not either. And like Wick, who said, Vanderbilt has won this game 3 years in a row, but
they had different players.
Well,
different quarterback.
I just don't – with the quarterback situation, I don't think they can keep up.
No, you're right. And their defense hadn't played well all season, all but maybe two games this season. They play well, two or three games. Other than that, this defense under Tarver has been a dismal. And, you know, at the end of the season, after this game, that's a decision. If Derek Mason, this is what, beside the game, if Derek Mason, and I like Derek Mason a lot. I go to bat for him anytime.
We all like Derek
exactly.
Mason.
Exactly. But if he wants to continue, if he wants to help this program move forward, like the AD said, because the AD said now, Turner, he's going to start doing some stuff to help this program move forward.
He said he's trying to figure out the stuff
exactly
that he's got
to
do. Getting the school to do the stuff
is
a different story.
Yeah.
Yes.
But he wants to do things. So if that's indeed the case, then you got to help him help you. And helping him help you is to get rid of Tarver. Because this defense under Tarver, and again, you hate calling for people's job, but if you're trying to help this program, you've given Tarver the task of fixing this defense or helping this defense become better. And they gotten worse. This defense has gotten worse.
Is that this just 1 year, though?
I know, but I can't see this defense getting any better under Tarver. I just can't. Unless Derek Mason says this like he did before. Give it back. Let me help you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me help you. You can still do some things, but let me help you. Let me help you put this defense together, or bring in a consultant to help him,
or bring in some better
players.
Players.
It's hard to do that at Vandy.
Yeah. Well, they bring in some good players.
Good players. You can get a few of them, but you're not getting the players.
You don't
have
the depth.
Exactly.
That
you don't have you know four or five you know four star guys hanging around the building.
All right. Hey. Well, we got the Vegas Golden Knights in town. The Nashville Predators squaring off. Tonight, a game you'll hear right here on 102.5 The Game. Preds assistant coach Dan Lambert, the brain behind the power play, he's going to join us next on The Morning Drive on ESPN's 102.5 The Game.